You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
No. Shoot your eye out.
Oh, no. It was the classic mother BB gun block. You'll shoot your eye out.
BB guns are dangerous. I don't want anybody shooting his eye out.
Oh, no. You'll shoot your eye out? My mother must have gotten to Miss Shields. There could be no other explanation.
Don't shoot your eye out! Don't shoot your eye out! No, no, when the fish are wet at her carbon, I said you want to get rid of my leg rifle.
You'll shoot your eye out, kid. Merry Christmas. Ho, ho, ho. No! Shut my eye out. You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Don't shoot your eye out.
Oh,
oh, oh.
Now, you be careful out there. Don't shoot your eye out.
So in A Christmas Story, Ralphie was obsessed with what? The Red Ryder BB gun, yes. And so this series that we're going to be doing all month long, it's been some, you know, we've done some intense stuff over the last few months, so we're just going to have some fun with this a little bit. And each week we'll show a different clip from a movie and then talk about some spiritual truths that we can learn from it. And there'll be a sequel to this. I mean, a Christmas at the Movies has to have a sequel, so you'll probably see this in a couple of years. But I want to talk about this idea of Ralphie's Red Ryder BB gun, because if you have seen the movie A Christmas Story, and I should just say that, you know, not everything in these movies is all completely, like, family-friendly, so, you know, just use discernment. But in this movie, he's obsessed with this gun, this air rifle that he wants to have, and the entire plot of the movie is what it looks like for Ralphie to get this, and, you know, without too many spoilers, he gets it, so it's kind of a big spoiler, but he does get it at the end, and as you saw in that very last part of the clip there, he ended up hitting himself in the eye, and by the end of the movie, you know, there's bigger things that Ralphie realizes to life than just getting this gun, this air rifle that he's always wanted. And so I want to talk about this idea of obsession, of wanting things, of wanting stuff. And the point that I want us to get this morning is that A Christmas Story shows us that it isn't about the stuff at Christmas. It's not about the stuff. And it's so easy for us to get caught up in this. And we'll, just so you know, when we get to the end here, like, stuff is okay. We're supposed to use our stuff and our money and our wealth for things. That's okay. We're not, like, going to turn into hermits and, you know, put on robes and live in a cave or something like that. But sometimes, or often, I would say as Americans, very often, we get caught up in the stuff. And not just at Christmas time, but certainly Christmas time is all about what we get and what we don't get. And as a kid, and maybe even as an adult, you know, there's that thing that you really wanted for Christmas. And you're like, ooh, and then Christmas morning comes, and you open the present, and the next one, or whatever that looks like for your family. Maybe it's Christmas Eve, whatever your tradition is. But you get to the end, and you don't have that thing that you wanted. And if there is a hint of disappointment, then the truth is, you are obsessed over stuff. And I'll say, I am obsessed over stuff. So, you know, it doesn't mean that you're going all Ralphie. By the way, what's his last name? I had to look it up. It's hard to find his last name. What's that? Parker. That was it. Yeah, Ralphie Parker. It takes some research to find his last name. But Ralphie Parker, the whole thing was about the BB gun. But even for us, sometimes we can get caught up in that. So let's turn the house lights on, and we're going to look at a passage in 1 Timothy chapter 6. So if you have your YouVersion app, you can go to 1 Timothy. It's near the end of the New Testament. If you have a paper Bible, 1 Timothy 6 is where we're going to be. We're going to be there for a while, so you can certainly open it and hang out there. And let me read it to you, and then we'll pull it apart a little bit. And this is the Apostle Paul talking. Paul wrote a significant portion of the New Testament, most of the epistles, the letters, Romans, Ephesians, all of that. But this particular letter, Paul wrote to Timothy, who was a young pastor. And he actually wrote two letters to Timothy, 1 Timothy and 2 Timothy. And there was just some instructions for this young pastor that was leading a church that actually Paul helped plant, that Paul helped start. And so there's a bunch of different things that he's sharing. And we come up here on 1 Timothy 6, verses 6 through 10. At the beginning of chapter 6, Paul was saying, there are people out there, he's saying, Timothy, watch out, because there's people out there that are using the gospel, and we talked about that last month, they're using the message of Jesus, they're using the church as a way to get rich. They're using it as a way to fill their own pockets, to do what they can to kind of basically misuse the message of Jesus, misuse the church so that they can become rich. And so he's basically saying, watch out, Timothy, be careful of these people. And then he finishes that thought in verse 6 here where he says, yet true godliness with contentment is itself great wealth. After all, we brought nothing with us when we came into the world, and we can't take anything with us when we leave it. So if we have enough food and clothing, let us be content. But people who long to get rich, to be rich, fall into temptation and are trapped by many foolish and harmful desires that plunge them into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And some people, craving money, have wandered away from the true faith and pierced themselves with many sorrows. So I want to break this passage down into two parts because there's, you know, if you have any kind of a banking, financial background, if you have a physical checkbook, if you know what one of those is, if you've ever done a spreadsheet, an Excel spreadsheet or anything like that, or a Google, what do they call it? Google Sheets, I think is what it's called. You would understand the concept of money. And something that is a gain is often recorded in black, which is where the term Black Friday comes from. This is free. The reason they call Black Friday that Friday after Thanksgiving, the official, unofficial first day of shopping, is the day that all of the businesses, at least pre-COVID, the day that all businesses, you know, they might have been in the red, they might have been in negative, that day, because everybody buys stuff, it puts them into what is called the black, which is the positive, which means you're making money. And so a positive, a gain, is a financial term for something that you earn that's good. And then the negative is a loss. You know, you profit loss. A loss, if you're recording it in a spreadsheet, often that's in red because that means it's a negative thing. And so Paul breaks this down because he's explaining to Timothy these people that are looking to get rich. They're looking to make financial gains. They're looking to make profit from the message of Jesus. He kind of breaks it down here into a profit and loss scenario and explains, hey, if these people want to talk about finances, if they want to talk about checks and balances and checkbooks and spreadsheets and all that, he said, let's give it to them in a way they can understand. And so it comes down to the question is, what do you want for Christmas? You know, when it comes to the stuff, Paul's going to break this down. He says, when it comes to the stuff that you want for Christmas, or just in general, there's a couple of things. First of all, there's the gain. Oh, you went ahead of me there. Okay, good. The gain, when it comes to positive, he explains some things that are good. And the first question that we need to ask when it comes to what do you want for Christmas is, what's valuable? What is valuable? And Paul tells Timothy that value is... Go back up. That value is in godliness. He tells Timothy that the value is in godliness. That's what's valuable. Like we have this, you know, we look at things in terms of dollars, cents, investment. What can we get from it over the long term? Perhaps what do we get from it over the short term? And Paul says, you know, let's stop thinking about money. Let's stop thinking about stuff as valuable. He says, what's valuable? What's valuable is godliness. And that's what he says in verse 6 here. As we already read, Paul writes it this way. He says, yet true godliness with contentment is itself great wealth. Other translations say, godliness with contentment is great gain. It is profitable. It is a wise investment, is godliness. And so when it comes to the stuff that we want and our obsessions and the things that we are looking for and the money and all of that, we're kind of like, oh, well, I need more. I need a better job. I need a promotion. I need to do more work because I need more stuff. And Paul says, wait a second, you think that's valuable? He says, what's valuable is godliness. Godliness with contentment, that is value. That is worth investing your time. And he'll explain why in a little bit here. But this idea of gain and what are we investing our time and our money and our effort, our energy into, true God-sized riches are found in godliness. Sorry. If you want to invest in something that matters, invest in your relationship with Jesus. He says that's where the gain is found. And again, we look at value in terms of, well, I understand that gold is valuable these days. Like, okay, and as we'll see in a moment, good luck with that, because it's not going to help you for eternity. And Paul says, when it comes to the stuff that you want, the first question you need to ask is, what's valuable? What is valuable to you and why? And Paul says, godliness with contentment, that is value. Being content, and we'll see that in a second, just being satisfied with where we are. And he says, that is wealth. Now, the world is going to say, what? You mean you're saying that you have a little bit and you're okay with that? You're so silly. Let me tell you how to get, you know, really build wealth. And there's all sorts of books out there. There's actually Christian books out there, too. How to build wealth, how to make a lot of money. That's actually not great wealth. That's what Paul is saying. Godliness, that's what's valuable. The second question we need to ask ourselves is, what's vulnerable? Like, the things that we think are valuable, the things that we think are important, the things that we want, the things that we are seeking and desiring, the question is, what are the things that are vulnerable? What things aren't really going to matter? And Paul says that the things that are vulnerable, that's stuff. Our stuff. And if you don't know what I mean by vulnerable, let's look at what Paul says in the passage. He says, next slide there, there we go, yeah. Godliness with contentment is great wealth. After all, we brought nothing with us when we came into the world. Now, I don't know, Matt and Ange, if you're watching, and I know, Nikki, you guys have recently had a baby, and I mean, there's babies all over the place. Did any of them come with anything? I mean, are you nodding your head no, yes? You know, I saw Marcus last week, and, you know, he did not seem to come with, you know, a wad of cash in his hand. There was no diamond, like, anklet or anything on him. I think we would all agree, and I think the moms would really be grateful that children are not born with diamond anklets. you know, but we don't come into the world with anything. Duh, that's obvious. And yet, somewhere in our minds, we think that we can take it with us when we go. Or at least the way we live seems to imply that. Because we look, this is valuable, this is important, therefore I'm going to invest my time into getting more of it. I'm going to build it up, I'm going to obsess over it, because I can take it with me. And Paul explains the obvious, which we know. He brought nothing into us when we came with us when we came into the world, and we can't take anything with us when we leave it. Like, I mean, people are buried sometimes wearing nice clothing. Sometimes people have things thrown into the casket with them. We know the Egyptians used to put all sorts of things in their pyramids, but those things don't leave this earth. They just rot and decay in the ground. And so Paul has explained to Timothy, when these people are trying to get rich around you, these people are trying to, that in the church are trying to build wealth, he's like, why? These things aren't going to last. These things aren't going to continue. You're going to die, and they're going to be left behind. It's stuff that you can't take with you. And I was thinking about this, actually just this morning, this idea came to me. Imagine... when it comes to this idea of what's vulnerable, what are the things that we can't take with us? What are the things that aren't going to last? Imagine that you're going to a foreign country, okay? And maybe you don't have to imagine. Maybe some of you have been to a foreign country. And you get there and you realize that there is some amazing fruit. We had mango in Mexico, and it's just good. The pineapple in Mexico is just, there's something about it being from there. And it's so, so good. And you're like, this is amazing fruit. This is so good. And you think, I want to taste this every day. I want this just to last. And so you kind of go online and you realize that, you know, you could probably clear out your account and really get some a lot of this fruit. And so you look and think, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. This fruit is so good. I'm going to empty my account to buy as much of this fruit because it's so tasty. And it's so yummy. But however, and maybe you know this, maybe you don't, but because of customs, you cannot take open fruit with you into another country. As soon as you get the customs, they will take any fruit. You're just, if it's canned, if it's packaged, that's different. But any fresh fruit, your vegetables, you cannot take into the United States of America from another country. And perhaps you have been around and you have watched, you know, or maybe you've heard some stories from some of us that have tried to take fruit into America. You know, as soon as they open your bag and see it, they take it. And so you know that this fruit cannot come with you back to the United States. And yet, knowing that, you still empty your account to buy it. And that would seem foolish. That would seem pointless. Why would you do that? Because you know as soon as you get to the Border and Customs Patrol people, that they will take the fruit from you and you can't take it with you in the United States. And this is the same kind of thing that we do with worldly wealth. We think, oh, wow, I'm going to spend time on this. I'm going to get more of this because it's going to, maybe this time it'll work. But it's not. And that would just be foolish for you to buy that fruit knowing you can't get into the country. And it's just as foolish for us to think that we can invest in things in this world and that they're going to come with us, physical things that are going to come with us into eternity. So the first question you have to ask is what's valuable. The second question is what's vulnerable, what's not going to last. And the third question is what's acceptable. What is acceptable? What is good enough for you? What is, and here's the question that we often say to ourselves, and I'm not pointing any fingers, like, we say things like, well, once I get that, then I'll be satisfied. Once I have that thing, that will solve it. Once I get that job, then things will be fine. Once I have that promotion, once I get through this season, then everything will be good. And we have this idea of like, well, it's just one more. And we have, so the question is, what is acceptable? Is there always one more? Because, and maybe as adults, I don't know how you guys do Christmas in your families with gifts or things like that. But I'm pretty sure that every year, you probably don't have a problem coming up with a Christmas list. Even if you got the things on your Christmas list last year. Because, well, I wanted it last year, but now I need this next thing. And Paul challenges Timothy as he talks to the church about what is this idea of what's acceptable. And the answer is, what's acceptable? Enough. Enough is acceptable. And that's what he says in verse 8 here. But going on, he says, so if we have enough food and clothing, let us be content. Now, I'm just scanning the crowd. If you're at home, online, this is, potentially you could be unclothed. But I can affirm that everyone in this room is clothed and has clothing. And honestly, you look like you're eating all right. And Paul says, if that's what we've got, that should be good enough. And we'll see why in a minute, because God provides all these things. But we're often like, no, this isn't enough. This isn't enough. Some have more than enough. but But this idea of having enough, let us be content. And, you know, the great theologian Mary Poppins once said, enough is as good as a feast. And that is brilliant if you think about it. And I know we talked about this in our Prime group a few weeks back. Well, what I call the myth of the buffet. The myth of the buffet. And there is a very large, prominent buffet in Lancaster County. And this buffet, if you've been there, it's not just a buffet, it's a smorgasbord. Which I don't know what that means as opposed to a buffet. I know in college, smorgasbord night meant leftovers from the week before. So smorgasbord in college wasn't that great word, but it's a smorgasbord. You have to say it like you got like something stuck in your mouth or something. Your dentures are popping out. But it's a smorgasbord. And this whole thing, right? They have everything. Like, you imagine it, and it is there for you to eat. It is incredible. They have, like, chefs carving things. Is it chefs or chefs? Chefses. They're carving things, and you can, like, oh, it's everything you can imagine. Then there's the whole dessert area, everything you can imagine. And it's, I don't know, I forget what it runs. I think the weekday special is, like, $20 a person. Which, that's a lot of money in most restaurants. If you go over the weekend, I'm pretty sure it's up in the 30s. $40 a person. Don't quote me on that. I should have done my research first. But I can tell you this, that if I were to go to a smorgasbord for $34 and eat all that I can eat, or go to a real restaurant like Taco Bell, and I could spend, I could be pushing $5, and I would be willing to bet that for those $5 and those $35, I would be just as full and could not eat anymore. And the way they get you on this, and I'm not like trying to bash smorgasbords or buffets, but the idea isn't about what you eat, it's about what you could eat. You can eat all that you can eat. All that you can eat. But the thing is that all that you can eat is the same whether you're at a huge smorgasbord or, you know, just at a fast food restaurant. And we buy into this idea that, oh, if I have more, if I have... And enough is all you're going to be able to eat anyway. And Paul calls us out on that. Hey, do you have enough? Then let's be content with that. And again, I'm not saying like, oh, that's it. Cancel Christmas. Oh, bah humbug. You know, whatever. I'm just saying we need to check our perspective. Paul says, if we have enough, let us be content with that. And we'll see in a moment because God has provided all these things that we have. And you don't need more than enough because more than enough is more than enough. And more than enough, if it's leftovers on your plate, no matter how amazing that leftover is, you can eat it. And maybe you could eat it, and maybe you shouldn't eat it. Well, yesterday we went down to Philly. We drove out to Philly to see Cara's Christmas concert at Cairn. And I have a picture of Ellie. I sat next to her. Anyway. What was I saying? Oh, and so we went there and we drove back. I think we were leaving on our way home around 9 o'clock. And we stopped one of the turnpike, I don't know what's up, one of the turnpike rest areas. And the boys were with us, and we went in, and we're like, you know, we need to have a snack to stay awake. And we spent like $30 at the 7-Eleven at the rest stop. All of us got all this food, and I had a bag of seven-layer tortilla dip combos. Dude, there was a plethora of combos at this 7-Eleven. Like, I love combos. They're so healthy. They're so good for you. And think about the time you save because it combines things together, like cheese and pretzels, or pepperoni pizza flavor and crackers. And this one was, you know, seven-layer dip and tortillas in a combo. And it was a big bag. And we're sitting there, and we had donuts. We had some other stuff, and the boys are in the back, and they were asking for the donuts. I'm like, oh, man, you can't eat, because they got combos too. And I said, you can't eat that whole bag of combos and then get some donuts. And Tommy was like, Dad, I wouldn't have eaten that whole bag. That's way too much food. I'm like, because I ate the whole bag of combos. And I'm still not sure if I've balanced out yet. It was a big bag of combos. And my point is, like, we have this idea of, what isn't enough enough? And yet we always want more. And Paul says, you know, think about what's acceptable. What is going to satisfy us? What are we going to stop at? And say, you know what? God, thank you for this. Not thank you for what I don't have, but thank you for what I do. I'm grateful for you providing for us. So those are the things that are gain. What do you want for Christmas? The gain things? They are what's valuable, what's vulnerable, what's acceptable. Godliness, stuff doesn't last, and enough should be acceptable. But then he kind of jumps over to the lost side, the profit lost, to the negative side of things. And he shares some things there that are lost. But these things are, if you're looking at a banking accounting sheet, these are the things that are actually going to cost you. These are the negative. These are the deficit. And the first thing that he says is that seeking stuff is destructive. He says not only is godliness positive, is enough good enough, and these things you can't take with you anyway. If you actually are seeking stuff, it's destructive. And listen to this passage. He's saying that this hurts you. Going after more hurts you. Look at the negative words that are in here. I didn't even highlight all of them. He says, people who long to be rich, people who long to be rich fall, no one likes to fall, into temptation and are trapped by many foolish and harmful desires that plunge them into ruin and destruction. Like, Paul isn't gray here. This isn't vague. He's not like, well, if you go after stuff, things might happen. What do you mean by things? Well, you know, things. No, he's very clear here. People that long to be rich, people that are going after stuff, people that want more, it says they fall into temptation. He says this word temptation means to be tested, that your faith is being tested. You're jumping right into something where you're like, oh, I'm going to see how close I can get without getting hurt. It'd be like the alcoholic going into a bar and saying, I'm going to hang out here, but not drinking. Why would you put yourself in that position? They're, like he said, people that are being rich, they're falling into temptation. They're being tempted. And they're trapped by many foolish and harmful desires. And this word foolish is kind of a cool word. It literally means without comprehension. It means, what are you thinking? Because everyone else can see this, but we, when you're using this foolish phrase, when you get trapped by something that's foolish, the Greek word here, it's a frenzied passion. The word, by the way, is anoites. Didn't do so well on that one. It's a frenzied passion which blocks better judgment. And he says, if you're going after stuff and you want more, you're going to be blinded. You're going to be blinded by the thing that you want to the things that really matter. And everyone else around us can see those things in us, but we get blinded to them. We get trapped by this. And Paul says, you know, look, don't be going after this stuff. And then the word ruin here, it literally means distress and torment. And then the word destruction, it's actually the same word that refers to when the world, and we talked about this in the End series, when the world is destroyed and God creates the new heavens and new earth, that's the word apollyon, is destruction. So Paul says, pursuing stuff is going to cause you to test your faith. He's going to get you trapped into something where you're not even going to see that you're heading into something that's going to hurt you. It's going to cause you to be in torment, and it's going to be something that's going to cause destruction. And so we're like, sign me up. Here's my Christmas list. Like, we need to have a better perspective on this. So seeking stuff is destructive. The second thing he says is that seeking stuff is disobedience. So not only does it hurt us, but when we are going after things, when we want more stuff, when materialism, which is the fancy word for it, when this desire to want more, this desire to be rich, when that becomes our goal, it's not just destructive, but it's also disobedience. He goes on and says, for the love of money, and this word is, it means to love money. It means the root there of Philadelphia. We know that word, Philadelphia. This is, I'm going to mess this one up too. Philargyria? Pilar Giri. I should, yeah. Let me know. I'm going to spend some time in Greece and come back, and I'll be able to pronounce all these someday. But it means this idea of the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. The word evil means wickedness. The word evil means evil. The word evil has to do with diabolical, with Satan, with evil. And he says that loving money is evil. Loving money is sin. Loving money is disobedience. Now, he doesn't say, as is often heard, that money is evil. He says loving money is evil. And we talked about that in our crop series in January 2017. That week was called Greed. If you go to mc3church.org, click on Listen to the Point, you can go to the crop series and listen to where we talked about not money is the root of all kinds of evil, but the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And here's the deal, is that if we are loving money, and if you were paying attention the very first week of the Duplicate series, that our C3 process is built around what is called the Great Commandment. And the greatest commandment is to love God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your mind, and with all of your strength. And so Paul is pointing out that if you're supposed to love God with all of everything, but now you're loving money, wait, now you're loving God with most of everything, but loving money with some. Or maybe it's even the other way around. Maybe you're loving money with most of who you are and loving God with what's left over. Because it's the root of all kinds of evil, this idea of wanting more stuff. And we're going to come back to this in a little bit. But if we are loving money, we are not fully loving God. And then the third thing he says is that seeking stuff is distracting. And this is the thing that's hard, like as a pastor, watching this happen. He says that when you start going after stuff, when you need more, when you need that more money, that bigger bank account, that better car, that nicer house, that bigger promotion, that better job, the more time working, whatever that, it starts to distract you. It is distracting you from the things that really matter. And that's what he says in verse 8. He says, I lost my notes here. He says, but some people craving money have wandered away from the true faith and have pierced themselves with many sorrows. He says it doesn't take much because people start seeking money and they wander away from the things that really matter. Because if money is our source of strength, which we'll come to in a moment, then God isn't. If money is our source of security, then God isn't. And if we don't have enough money, then therefore we are not secure. Therefore we need to get more of it. And therefore God becomes less and less. And they've wandered away from the true faith. I remember one of the things that broke my heart, and I mean this, I'm not just being like pastoral. One of the things that broke my heart as a youth pastor, and it does here certainly, was you'd hit this junior year with students. And in their junior year, typically, they were old enough to get a job. And as soon as students got a job, that was it. I don't have time to come on Wednesday night. We had Wednesday night youth. Our youth group was Wednesday night. I don't have time for Sunday morning. I've got to work. And I am telling you, and some of you are going to ignore this with you and with your own kids, but I'm telling you that money and jobs had these students drift and drift and drift and drift. And if you talk to some of them now, 10 years later, I never go to church. Well, what happened? When did you stop? Well, I got a job when I was in high school. And that kind of thing has happened. And I know as adults, too. Well, you know, I have to take this raise. I have to take this position. I have to do this thing. And it's keeping me from connecting to the body on Sundays. It's keeping me from a prime group. And I'm telling you that is a focus that's distracting you away from what really matters. Because as Paul already said, what matters the most? Godliness. That's where real wealth is found. And that was always so hard, and it's so true, because we wander away from the true faith. And then he says, they pierce themselves with many sorrows. And what's crazy is watching people wander away from Jesus, pursuing money, pursuing a job, pursuing more stuff, and then years later going, my life is awful, and I hate God, and this stinks, and I hate church. And well, wait a second. Don't start blaming God for your poor decisions. And it happens. It happens because, well, if you were pursuing godliness and pursuing the things that matter, God is going to come through for you. And again, we'll come to that in just a moment. But this idea of piercing themselves with many sorrows, like just Paul is saying, wake up. Timothy, tell your church to wake up. Make sure that they're not seeking stuff because that is driving people away. So the loss that Paul shares is seeking stuff is destructive. It's causing ruin. It's causing pain. It's causing damage. It's disobedience. It's wrong to love money. It's wrong to love those things. And then seeking stuff is distracting. We start pursuing those things and we start to drift away from Jesus, from the things that matter. So the point this week is that a Christmas story shows us that it isn't about the stuff at Christmas. And we can laugh at Ralphie and we can have fun. And again, there's nothing wrong with having a Christmas list. There's nothing wrong with saying, you know what, this would be nice. Those aren't the things. But if it becomes our passion, our obsession, if getting more gets in the way of our relationship with Jesus, then you have crossed a line. Because it's not about the stuff. So, here's where I want to throw out just some encouragement, rather than just beat ourselves up over this. And that's the question that I want you to ask. What's your red rider? What is your red rider? What is the thing that you are thinking about? Next slide. That you are thinking about, what is the thing that you want more than anything else? And I would just encourage you, whatever that thing is, make that thing godliness. Seek godliness. Don't crave whatever your red rider is. Crave godliness. And here's some reasons. We can seek godliness because, for one, your God is by your side. You are not alone, ever. You're never alone. You're never alone. In Hebrews 13, the writer of Hebrews says it this way. He says, don't love money. Be satisfied. That's what Paul already said. Don't love money. Be satisfied with what you have. Why? Why does the writer of Hebrews tell us this? Well, this time, unlike Paul, who was just kind of saying, here's some reasons. He said, here's why. For God has said, I will never fail you. I will never abandon you. So we can say with confidence, the Lord is my helper. So I will have no fear. What can mere people do to me? He says, we can have confidence. We don't need to pursue these things because God is by our side. God has you in His hands. God has everything that you have is from Him. And He provides everything for you. And God will always provide enough. Can I just say that again? God will always provide enough. If you think you don't have enough, then it's not God's problem, it's your perspective. Because God will always provide. God says, I will never fail you. I will never abandon you. And see, you know, here we are in Christmas 2021, and, you know, the big question is the supply chain issues. How are we going to get our stuff? And no question, there is a sense of panic in America. Because what if we can't get our stuff? And what are the ways that we can resolve this supply chain issue? What are the ways that we can make sure we get our stuff? Because our stuff must be our source of security. Because getting our stuff must be our responsibility. And the writer of Hebrews says, no. God is the one that provides everything. And you know what? There wasn't a supply chain when Jesus was around. There was no truckers union. There was no postal service, at least not that we would consider a postal service. There wasn't even Amazon, and they didn't even have drones ready quite yet. They were going to do the delivery drones, but they weren't quite ready. That was like later in the New Testament. I'm just kidding. But we have these ideas. Or, you know, we were just listening to a podcast yesterday, and there's this guy in Dallas talking about what they called, was it Icemageddon last year, where there was this ice storm in Dallas. Ice, just ice. You probably are going to have a drink at some point today, and you'll have an ice cube in it. And ice caused all sorts of issues where, you know, the people didn't have electricity, they didn't have water, they couldn't get, the stores had nothing in them. And he was saying, you know, how interesting it is that when that ice happened, all of a sudden our foundation was shaken. Their foundation was shaken because the ones that they could count on, the ones that provided for them, couldn't come through because of the ice. And he said it was just a great reminder that, you know what? It's not about those things that is our source of supply. It's not about who's in the office, the Oval Office. If it's your guy or the other guy or the other guy, they're not the ones that provide for your needs. God is always the one. He says, I will never fail you. So we can trust in Him. We don't have to pursue stuff because, you know what? God's going to give you enough. He's going to get you through this. Pursue godliness and leave the rest up to Him. The second thing is that your focus can't divide. And we kind of already alluded to this, and we actually looked at this during the name series. But in Matthew chapter 6, verse 24, Jesus says this. He says, no one can serve two masters. And that word master is kurios, Lord, the one who is the leader. That was the week that I dressed up as an employee of TwinKiss and said, you know, when you have a job, you listen to your boss because your boss is your boss and you do what they say. And if we're going to call Jesus our Lord and our master, then we're going to obey Him. And Jesus says, you can't serve two masters. He says, either you'll hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to the one and despise the other. What He's saying is that, you know, you're going to start to play favorites somewhere. You can't serve two masters. You're going to be like, oh, yeah. I mean, and maybe you've had a job like this. I had a job like this. I remember when there were certain people that were the supervisors for the day at Dairy Queen. And I'm like, oh, man, it's so much fun working with them. And then you're like, hey, who's working with you next week? Oh, no, it's her. And they both had the same title. But we definitely had different opinions because we couldn't serve both. And that's what Jesus is saying. He says, you cannot serve both God and money. And there's a word here, it's mammon, M-A-M-M-O-N. And it doesn't just mean cash. It means all of the worldly wealth, all of the things that we pursue. He says, you can't do both. Don't be deceived. And if we're supposed to love God with everything and we love money, then we're not loving God with everything. That's what Jesus is saying here. You can't serve two masters. You're going to love one and hate the other, be devoted to one and despise the other. You can't do them both. You can't. Only one master can tell you which way. Because, even more so, God and money are telling you two different things. Because God says, I'm your source of supply. And money says, no, I am. And Jesus says, you can't serve both of these masters. You can't do it. And let me just show you this really cool thing. This is in Matthew chapter 6, verse 24. He's talking about this idea of your treasure and where your treasure is, your heart is. And just trust God and that you can't be materialist and be following Jesus. And then the very next verse. Now, in your Bibles, it's separated by a paragraph heading. But in Jesus speaking, the very next words that He says, therefore, I tell you, do not worry. Do not worry about what you wear or clothing. And that's where the whole passage about seeking first God's kingdom and God will provide everything you need. Like, there's a reason these are tied together. Jesus is saying, money isn't the source, but don't worry because God is. God will always come through. So your focus can't divide. You can't do both. And again, we talked about this name, Lord Kurios, mc3church.org, the name series. It was, the Lord was the title, the 12th of September. We talk about that idea of what is a master, what is a Lord. And then finally, your wealth won't provide. At the end of 1 Timothy chapter 6, kind of Paul jumps to another thought and then comes back to this idea of money in verse 17. And he says to Timothy, he says, teach those who are rich in this world. And so he says, look, there are people that have money. There are people that have wealth. Hey, are you an American? You're one of those people. Paul didn't say that. That was me adding that. But we are rich. He says, not to be proud and not to trust in their money, which is so unreliable. Come on. Inflation, that phrase. I mean, things you bought last year are a very different price this year, but it's the same amount of money you had. What happened? He says, money is unreliable. Money isn't going to come through for you. He says, their trust should be in God, who richly gives all we need for our enjoyment. Like, and that's cool too. Like, God isn't just like this idea of I need to be rich to be content, I need to be rich to be happy. Paul says, actually, God's the one that provides, and he does it for your enjoyment. Because I'd be willing to bet there are things in your life, and I feel like I was a song coming on here, but the best things in life are free. And that's so true. He says, tell them to use their money to do good. They should be rich in good works and generous to those in need, always being ready to share with others. So understand here, Paul isn't saying money is evil and people that have money are bad people. Just use the wealth you have. And again, if you're American, you have wealth. I don't care what you think about the people around you. You have it. And so Paul says, tell those people, use their money well. Use it to do good things. Use it to share with others. And he says, by doing this, they will be storing up their treasure as a good foundation for the future so that they may experience true life. He says, what can you take with you when you go? Eternal treasure. Investing in things that matter now, and then you will have those eternal rewards later. So, your wealth won't provide. He says, it's unreliable. Don't get caught up in the stuff you have. It's not going to provide for you. God will. So what is your red rider? What is the thing you are seeking? Again, having money isn't bad. But allowing money to become the goal over Jesus. Anytime that pursuing money or a job or a thing or a stuff impinges on your relationship with Jesus, you have crossed the line and you're in sin. And you're trying to find satisfaction in something that's not going to be there. If you wake up in the morning and that's usually your time with God, oh, but I got called in early, I can't spend time with God, I'll just have to deal with it someday. Like, those are just little steps that are causing you to wander away from your faith. So Christmas story shows us, Ralphie shows us, that it's not about the stuff at Christmas. Let's not get caught up in the stuff. Let's enjoy the things we have. Yeah, buy gifts for your kids. Enjoy exchanging presents. No problem. Have a job. Like, that's a good thing. But let's not allow that to become our obsession. And I feel like maybe this wasn't on my notes, but you know, I wonder if there's a part of us going, oh, I need this new thing, I need this next thing, and God's like, you'll shoot your eye out, kid. Like, why pursue that? There's nothing good in it. Let's pursue godliness. Father, thank you so much for your word. And I know, I mean, it's Christmas, and we love to celebrate. We love to have fun. We love to give gifts. We love to receive gifts. And I just pray, God, in all of that, that we wouldn't allow those things or that pursuit of stuff to get in the way of our relationship with you, because you are eternal. You are what matters. You are going to last forever. And I just pray that you would help us to seek godliness, to develop godliness, to love you with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and not love money or anything else. And help us to realize that you, God, are with us every moment and are always going to provide for our needs. And maybe we just need to take the step to trust you. Thank you so much for your great love for us. God, that comfort that you're with us isn't just a wish, but it's a reality. We are grateful to you. In Jesus' name, amen.